let's talk about something else, something that most of us love to chat about or potentially just look at, even if we're not in the market, is property. Ben Kingsley is property investment analyst with Empower Wealth and joins you now. We're going to talk all things property in this time slot over summer. Hi, Ben.
Hello.
Today we thought we'd look at suburbs that have surprised us, big turnarounds, suburbs that maybe weren't seen as popular once that are incredibly popular now, suburbs that started out as relatively affordable that now are affordable to a very, very few people in society. And we seem to see really big swings now, changes that happen really quickly. You've got some interesting data there.
Yeah, we do. We've got some valuer general data, and we've got this back to 1974. So we're going to go back in a time warp machine.
Hey, I was born in 1974, so that time warp is a good one.
Well, I'm a 71 baby myself. Okay. So this was back in the time where the city was a dead zone. So when you've got a dead zone, basically everyone, property, you know, clock watching, and off they went back home to their quarter acre block out in the suburbs. So they got in their Holden cars and they went out wide. Now what we're seeing, and obviously the changes that have occurred over that time have been quite significant. The one is really the double household income. So the wife started to get a part-time job, and then we moved into the 80s and 90s where, you know, women now started to look into having careers, and now we've got double household incomes with six-figure salaries that are coming through, and we've seen a rapid change in terms of what we're looking for. So our city's become a really large populace, you know, one of the top 100 cities in the world by population. And so we're seeing a real change in what's happening around that. So convenience, congestion, those types of things have led to lifestyle decisions. And some of that has meant that the inner city suburbs have gone crazy in terms of valuations.
So back to 1974, where you've got this data, is there information on what was kind of seen as the most popular suburb? Where were people, where was the most desirable suburb to live?
Yeah, look, definitely between the city and the Bayside. So the areas of Middle Park, Albert Park, and also obviously the famous inner eastern areas of the Toorak's, the Camberwells, you know, the South Yarras,
so those types of areas. The first established areas.
Yeah, they were. And if you think about it, all of the houses, you know, back in those times, we're talking about all of the really stately homes being vistas, having on the hills. And we had the workers' cottages in the Collingwoods, the Abbotsfords and the North Fitzroys and that type of Clifton Hill area. And that's the real significant change we've seen predominantly in valuations. We've seen those areas gentrify into hipville areas and, you know, and we've seen them explode in terms of their price valuations.
Well, I've had plenty of texts already come in. 0437 774 774. Of course, you can join the conversation. You can phone us 1300 222 774. Fitzroy has changed from heroin junkyard to hipster junkyard, and it's also killed the Aboriginal community and the immigrant small businesses since that's happened.
Yeah, look, an interesting conversation. And if you look at any sort of major city, what you do see is those lower socio-demographic areas, due to affordability and due to the change of people who are coming into those areas, things are difficult. You know, the little Thai restaurants open up, the wine bars, the coffee shops, and that's not something that the lower socio-demographic can afford. And so we obviously see them being moved out and that type of gentrification occur.
My parents bought their house for $80,000. Now it's worth $1 million. Ringwood has totally changed. 3 exclamation points.
Yeah, look, one of the big surprise packets has been that sort of Ringwood area, the Mount Waverley, Glen Waverley type areas, Blackburn, Doncaster. And that has been something of interest to us in the last couple of years, and really led by the Asian community who are sort of setting themselves up in Australia. They're coming across with some big incomes, some real hard work ethic, and they're really sort of putting themselves into the community. No different than when the Italians and the Greeks arrived and set themselves up in areas like, you know, Lygon Street and Carlton, and also around the Brunswick area. We're definitely starting to see that. And we think that is driven by, you know, being in your local community, and then also by the schools that are in that area.
A text, I grew up in Carlton in the 50s. It wasn't trendy. I loved the vibe as a child. So close to the city, I walked to the Vic Market, to the exhibition buildings. My grandmother wouldn't visit us because we lived in Carlton. Now if I lived in Carlton, it's so trendy. My mum lives in Thornbury, and that's also so trendy. How times have changed. That's from Lynn. What were some of the ones that jumped out to you, Ben?
Oh, look, some of the interesting ones. So here, Fitzroy North, as an example. In 1974, the median house price was $9,000. Fast forward to the end of 2014, and we've got a median house price of $1,014,000. So a gross return of 11,167%, or $1,005,000.
What's the data though on what the average wage was then in 1974? Is it relative? We talk about housing affordability, just the general cost of living.
Yes.
And what we get paid. So how relative is it?
It's extremely relative. I mean, the one thing about property, it's an emotional asset. So 70% of the population buy on emotion and 30% are for investment. So there's investors in there as well. And we absolutely know that there's a very strong correlation between people who are able to afford to live in a location. You know, quite simply, we can all have a look in the magazines and dream on Domain and realestate.com and have a look at all these beautiful properties. But the reality is that's just, you know, dreaming, and we're just quite interested in property in general. When, you know, if I wanted to go and live in Middle Park, I'm going to potentially have to bring $250,000 salary with me to live in that location. Mm-hmm. So there's absolutely no doubt that people's ability to borrow and repay is also going to drive values.
There was an article in the Weekend Papers, and this text from Nola in Ringwood is alluding to this as well. I've lived in various parts of Ringwood for the past 40 years. It was always a family area until about 10 years ago. Now the area I live in has become full of apartments 3, 4, 5 stories high. It's quite a long text. It goes on saying that it's just changed the area. But lots of suburbs, lots of places where they were just family homes are now have apartments as well. Where and why are we seeing these changes?
A lot of reasons why. Mainly is it's obviously economy of scale in terms of adding amenity and facilities from a government point of view. So we want more people to be living closer to the city where all the infrastructure. When we go and do greenfield developments and new subdivisions, it's very hard to get bus lines and trains lines, very expensive to do that. So there's positives and negatives. The real positives of having this sort of higher density living is it does sustain the Italian restaurants, the little Indian restaurant, the Thai restaurant. So you get that sort of livability score, that culture score, that I can wander down to my local strip shop area and go and have something to eat or go to the wine bar. So that population is needed so those restaurants can sustain themselves. The negative is obviously the congestion and finding a park at your favourite, you know, high street area. You can't do that much anymore.
How have hubs changed and central hubs? And when I mean that, depending on where you live, the CBD may not be your central hub. Chadstone may be your central hub. So over the years and over the period that you've got this data, where have we seen the focus change of where people's place of work may be or place of socialising may be?
Yeah, we've definitely seen as the city's grown, you'll have very few people who live in, say, Yarraville and go and work down in Ringwood. It's just too hard to get across the city. So we'll make decisions based on time of travel. If we're going to do a 40-hour work week and it's going to take us an hour to get to and from work every day, we're going to make decisions about where we live. And so those hubs are going to be important in terms of those work hubs. So we're seeing the government spend a bit of time looking at sort of areas like Dandenong and trying to make that a hub. And we've obviously got hubs around sort of Northcote now, and that sort of, and then we've got Docklands and those types of hubs that are also being built over time.
Have you recently sold your home, and were you shocked at the return that you got for your investment? How long did you have your home, and how long did it take to get that sort of investment? 1-300-222-774. Or have you been in your home the whole time? Has it been a generational home, and how have you seen your area change? 1-300-222-774, and you can text 0437-774-774. I bought my house in Brunswick in 1974 for $20,000. I sold in 2012 for $1.21 million. Now I live in Warburton. That's from Roger. That sounds like a really smart move, Roger.
Happy days.
Another text from Roseanne saying, what about the West? What about Williamstown and Yarraville? How have you seen those areas change?
Yeah, they are classic cases of gentrification occurring as we speak. So people are making conscious choices about the type of accommodation that they need to live the type of life that they live. An example would be, you know, sort of a family of four trying to live in a two-bedroom apartment. Just simply won't happen. So they're going to make a decision about where do I find that house to live and how close do I get to the city. And so we're seeing that shift over to the inner west. So areas like Yarraville, Seddon, those types of areas, Newport, that's really going strongly at the moment because people are saying, I'm going to be 5 or 7 kilometres away from a major employment centre. I've got the lifestyle element of the coffee shops and the scenes. I mean, Yarraville Village is one of the most beautiful little villages around Melbourne. That's the type of thing you're going to see change. So there'll be more and more of those little villages. I mean, if you remember High Street, Northcote and Wethgar, you know, some 20 years ago, you know, it's just transformed to now some of the best eateries and restaurants in Melbourne and some of the best wine bars and cocktail bars around.
How much have we seen change and how much do you believe we will continue to see change where we live and choose to live? And if you look at the, I guess, a similar case in London, people are used to travelling long periods to get into the city. I know our infrastructure, our public transport infrastructure may not always support this, but how much will we see people moving to out further than they may have expected because it just makes more sense for their family or it may just be a more sensible lifestyle choice for them and it won't be seen as a strange thing to do in the slightest.
Yeah, I think at the moment what we're seeing is the 1 hour to 1 hour 15 is the threshold. I think people are making a conscious decision that, you know, I've got so limited spare time and free time now that we're starting to see those changes. So what type of infrastructure would make a rapid change to that? Well, it's actually a fast train. So if you can get to and from a destination, say, what if we could get to Ballarat in, say, 30 minutes?
Oh, my God, but how long have we been having that conversation?
Well, we've
Don't
been...
Don't bring up the fast train.
It is eventually going to come. Mm. You know, mark my words, it will definitely happen. We need to... Our population will grow. It needs to grow. So we're going to see those types of things. But if you're talking about building a highway that's fast for the first 20 minutes and then I'm clogged up closer into town, that's going to do nothing.
Well, I think it was, don't quote me on this, but I think it was Matthew Guy that was saying it will become a state of multiple cities. So, you know, Bendigo and Ballarat will be seen in the same way as Melbourne City and that you'll choose to live in these various hubs if we have the infrastructure to support that.
Correct. That's absolutely 100% true. So areas like, so Albury-Wodonga would be a perfect example. If you could move a fast train at 500 kilometres an hour, you're going to be able to get to Melbourne in sort of 45 to an hour. That would make very livable.
Life-changing. That would change our landscape dramatically.
It would.
Mary's in Glen Waverley. Hi, Mary.
Oh, hello, Rochelle. I'm interested in your topic. I've lived in this city of Monash for over 30 years, and I've noticed a distinct change, particularly in the last decade, at an increasingly rapid rate. When a house is sold, it's bulldozed from the whole block is cleared, and either a house goes up from fence to fence or units go up from fence to fence. And it is set back from the road, according to council regulations, but that setback is concreted. And it may have a few little plants, but it's certainly the whole place is denuded of any foliage, and yet the council has an overlay. It promotes itself as a garden city, and it's very rightly so. It should be proud of its parkland, but in terms of the privately owned property, there are certain regulations overlying existing properties. For instance, you can't reduce or take down a tree if it's more than a certain height and more than 2 years old. And yet if someone buys the property, they can bulldoze the whole thing. And
changes the landscape of your street quite dramatically, Mary, doesn't it?
All the streets over several suburbs, and the councils, hey, they're talking about it, they've been talking about it, but they can't push through legislation. Meanwhile, the bulldozers plough ahead. And another department of the council, meanwhile, is encouraging homeowners to have biodiversity in their gardens and to plant indigenous plants and trees, to build wildlife corridors. And it's just...
How do you bridge those two? Thank you, Mary. You're with Ben Kingsley, who's a property investment analysis for Empower Wealth. What Mary raises there is happening in lots of different areas. How do you or can you bring those two worlds together?
Can you slow change? It's a really interesting question, Mary. The reality is that council have to do a juggling act. They're looking for obviously increasing their amount of residents and sort of services they provide, but that takes money. So when you do see a single block being subdivided into a duplex or into apartments, they are potentially obviously getting greater revenue from that. And then it's also about that livability that we're talking about as well. So you've got to keep lobbying that council to sort of say, you know, these are our non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. These are the things that we want to see in our community remain in our community, and keep obviously lobbying your councillors.
A question for you, Ben. Why is Lang Warren property so hot over the last 2 years?
So it's a fringe suburb. We're starting to see more and more development out that way.
As a girl from Gippsland, I find the word suburb and Lang Warren really strange. When people say, you know, Druin is a suburb, I'm like, really? I grew up in Mowie, and Druin was kind of really close to Mowie, and that felt like the country, but that's how it's changed.
Yeah, there's the expansion of the city. I mean, you know, if you think about, you know, what was it, 5 or 6 years ago, the 2030 scheme came out, and we were trying to have those green wedges. But the reality is we're growing as a city, and our city will have around 1.3 million more residents by 2028. So it's going to grow significantly. So areas like in Narre Warren and those areas where they're larger blocks, so 1 acre blocks, are being subdivided into quarter acre blocks. And so those people who have got that significant land are actually getting a nice little windfall. But it's
there's also a good train line along there as well. So is that the reason why Lang Warren is so hot right now?
Anywhere where there's train infrastructure, so not so much tram, but train infrastructure, which basically, you know, obviously avoids you from any traffic and congestion, is a good thing. So you'll find that some of the better performing suburbs from a capital growth point of view are usually on train line areas.
Steve's in Carrum Downs. Hi, Steve.
Hi, I back in 1977 bought a house in Brighton, an old Victorian weatherboard house, and I paid $32,000 for it. Now, it doesn't sound a lot, but in those days I was earning about $70+ a week, and you could buy a house in Chelsea for about $13,000-$14,000.
Mm-hmm.
I sold the house in 2007 and sold it for about $850,000. Bought a house in Bond Beach, which we paid $840,000 for, and now is worth about $730,000. So, just don't know.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, there's lots of attitudes out there, Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, that people think that, investment in property is just a sure thing.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's winning on property. I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to become a property investor. It's all going to be A-OK. And that's not always the case.
That's right. I'm in the building industry, and I know that there's lots of people that buy houses and think they're going to make a fortune out of them because they're going to do them up. It doesn't always work. Far from it.
Thank you, Steve. Well, I hope your property continues to go up while you're there. 1-300-222-774. You can text 0437-774-774. I'll get your comments on Steve in just a moment, Ben Kingsley, but let's quickly check. Steve from Carrum Downs before Ben raised a good point. Property isn't always a success, yet it's kind of billed that way a little bit.
It is. There's a lot of property spruikers out there who sort of think that it is a get-rich-quick scheme, and over the long term, property does go up in value. We are seeing that. But, you know, it's also a hedge for inflation. But, you know, the cost of money goes down. So what you need to understand, and Steve's was a great example, Brighton, it's got a high status. It's a beautiful area. It's close to the bay. It's got scarcity value in the sense that the types of properties, the character of homes that are there are just not easily found. And when you start to hear what we saw about Mary's conversation around knocking down those houses and building different types of homes, those rarer homes, those character type homes, become scarcer and scarcer. And that's the type of asset that performs very well, especially in that 3 and 4 bedroom range.
This is an interesting one. This is a text question. What's the future for Geelong? I'm thinking it's good.
Yeah, look, I think one of the big things, we talked about it earlier, is the direct train route. That's going to have a significant positive impact. I mean, at the end of the day, does Geelong pass the livability score? Do people go down there and say, this is very livable, I could live down here? And they do.
Every time I go to Geelong, I'm like, I want to live here. It's beautiful.
It is, and that's the point. I mean, but where do I get my higher income to live the aspirational life that I want to live? Well, I'm usually going to have to come back to a central business district where I can earn a higher income. So you're going to see more and more people commute from these type of centres. And so we will see Geelong, you know, recover from the Ford and the whole Alcoa sort of thing and move forward. And we've got a progressive mayor down there. So that's the type of stuff that you do need in regards to seeing change happening in that type of marketplace.
Just quickly before we go to Anne in Box Hill, two suburbs that people have asked questions on via text, wanting to know, is there any news on the future of Knoxfield? And what do you say about Berwick? I guess Berwick is very similar. We touched on Lang Warren.
Yep.
What about Knoxfield?
Knoxfield's an interesting one. It's again, it's one of those areas where it's sort of now fully utilised. So the land's all done and dusted. And that's a good thing. So there's some scarcity there. What we do need down there is some good infrastructure and some opportunity for close proximity to work. So we're going to see hopefully a bit more of that semi-industrial type area where you've got some factories, but also some sort of smaller type commercial type of employment opportunities down. That's what it needs. And in terms of from a school point of view, if the schools pick up the game, the parents and all that notice how good the schools are, and that's also another critical factor.
Anne's in Box Hill. We don't have long, Anne. If you can make your question quick.
I'll be very quick.
That's all right. If you can be quick, what's your question?
Look, I've lived in Box Hill for over 10 years now, and I've seen a massive change in the architecture and the skyline. And I'm concerned and yet happy. The prices have gone up very well for me as a owner. But I'm concerned that if I stay any more than 10 years, with the development going on at the moment, is Box Hill going to turn into a slum area?
No, it's definitely not going to turn into a slum area, Anne. It's one of those areas where you're actually seeing a really high demographic of professional people moving into that area. So in terms of job security and prospects for good income growth, it's going to be very strong. So watch this space. Box Hill is set to become a blue chip area.
I'm sorry we couldn't get through all of the texts with all of the suburbs and places where you live to get Ben's point of view on it. Ben, thank you so much for coming in and launching this new segment with us. You've been with Ben Kingsley from Property Investment Analysis.
Analyst.
Thank you. Gosh, you know, then once you get stuck on it, you keep saying it over and over again. Could you change the title?
Sure.
Thank you. At Empower Wealth. After the 5 o'clock news, you would have heard today that there's been a